At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome to the Beyond Broadcast podcast, a show which takes a behind-the-scenes look at industry professionals and their lives working in the broadcasting and entertainment industry. So today, I'm lucky enough to be speaking with New Zealand radio producer Ryan Foster. Now, Ryan has had a career in radio spanning close to a decade, most notably with the New Zealand hip-hop R&B radio station MyFM in Auckland, before returning to his hometown of Christchurch, working with easy listening station The Breeze. Welcome to the show, mate. Such a pleasure to be able to talk to you. How are things, mate?
Thanks, going great, and good to see your face again, Jamie, as we'll delve into. But we started our careers at a similar time as well, so you've ended up on one side of the world, and I'm here in New Zealand representing us still here. So, but no, awesome to be here.
I think this is obviously going to be the thing with a trend of a lot of my early guests I'm going to be having on this podcast, is that Ryan and I actually studied together. We've known each other for a wee while. It's a bit of a reunion in a sense. We actually spoke off air about the fact that it's been almost 10 years since we've actually been face to face. But the best thing is, I think Ryan and I are going to be able to explore a lot because, well, I've managed to be following his career throughout this time. And Ryan has done a lot of fantastic things. One included thing is obviously you recently got married to what was your girlfriend and is now your wife after many years. Didn't you guys get married last March, April? In 2024?
Yes, March. Yeah. 23rd of March. Getting up. So closing in on the 1 year anniversary. So yeah, thanks, sir.
Oh mate. No, that's honestly fantastic. Seriously, when I saw that on social media like popping off, I was like, Ryan, finally. I was waiting for you to get on the day, waiting for you to get the ring out. I don't know if the engagement was long, but mate, I was so happy to see that. And obviously, congrats to you both. I couldn't imagine a better couple, to be honest. And his missus is absolutely lovely.
Oh, and I rose after 12 years together. So we met at 18 and then proposed at 30. So yeah, took my time, but well worth it, and happily married.
Well, mate, I think yeah, the proof is in the pudding, obviously, because you guys have a fantastic relationship. And in that same sense, I think relationships are going to come up a lot in this conversation, because I feel like that's something that you've been very good at developing over the years, whether it be obviously familial or obviously work. But what we'll first jump into is obviously you grew up in the same city as I did, both myself and Ryan from Christchurch, New Zealand. And I guess the first question I should ask, mate, is obviously how did you find growing up in Christchurch? Like, what was your childhood like? How did you find growing up in the city?
I loved growing up in Christchurch. It was, obviously Canterbury and Christchurch is very rugby focused in the area. And My brother was playing from an early age, and my dad was a coach of his team, so I started playing at four. You couldn't actually register to you about 5 years old, so I think I started playing at about four, kind of unregistered for a little bit there as well, and so grew up playing sport and stuff like that, backyard cricket, and it was just all around. I remember there was a cul-de-sac right near my house, and me and my brother used to drag a wheelie bin from a random neighbour, put in the middle of the cul-de-sac, and play cricket there. I had one kid come up to me while we were playing there and asked to join us in, and so he used to play with us every weekend, and then we'd play backyard cricket out in this cul-de-sac and stop for cars and stuff like that as well. And then years later we went to the same high school, bumped into each other, me and that guy who played cricket together as well, and like we used to, yeah, just, it was playing sport, it was stupid things like throwing water bombs at places and just mucking around as kids, just to bike everywhere as well around Christchurch, even for rugby trainings. I remember as a kid I'd just be biking to, yeah, 20 minutes down the road, and then we'd have a game and I'd go bike to that as well and stuff like that as well, and just used to sometimes had the gloves on in winter because it was freezing and stuff like that as well. But yeah, no, so I loved it. It was social, it was great, and it was very much sport and outdoors oriented. I was never inside, just only to watch the shows growing up, maybe a bit of Dragon Ball Z or something like that as well, or a bit of Pokemon growing up. Like, that was the only time I was inside. Other than that, it was out playing sport and hanging out with mates and stuff like that in Christchurch, was an awesome place to grow up.
So I think that's the thing I always found interesting about you, because on the first day I met you, which I think I would have been about 17, 18 myself, when I ended up running into you, is when I pictured you, I never pictured you as someone being interested in media, entertainment, or anything of the ilk. I always saw you as being someone that might be an athlete, might be someone that goes to, you know, university, rugby, all that sort of carry on. So I guess it kind of leans into the first real question and kind of diving into your journey into radio itself. How did you end up getting into radio? Because I know a little bit about it, but I'm sure listeners would love to hear how you kind of like got the bug.
Yeah, well, mine's a bit weird. I suppose I kind of fell into media, really. It wasn't planned out from the start. It wasn't a dream of mine since I was a kid. It was so a friend of mine, when I was at high school, a friend of mine, Graham, he had a real passion for media, and he said to me, do you want to be a co-host on my show? I'm starting at a local community station called Plains FM, and he needed a co-host for a show, and we used to just talk quite a lot and got on really well, and used to have really good banter and stuff like that as well. So he just thought of me in the sense there as well, that we got on really well, we clicked, and we could have really good chats and stuff like that. So he thought that might translate to on air. So he approached me about it, and I said, oh yeah, sounds a bit of fun. And then he said, cool, we're doing this, and we had a meeting. So anyway, we went into Plains FM, the two of us, and I was at the time maybe 15 and he was 16. We're in the same year at class, but I was just a little bit younger, so I didn't have my license. So he drove us there to Plains FM. We had a meeting and we walked out from that, figured out we're going to do a 1 hour show on a Monday, 5 till 6 p.m. And it was called the Graham and Ryan Show. So our basis of that was two mates hanging out, having a bit of banter, and we'd play a bit of music. And that was my first real step into media, that show there. And that's when I accidentally crossed paths with you as well at Plains FM there. But we were doing the Graham Ryan Show there for maybe about a year and a half, would have been, when we were doing that for. And it was every Monday, 5 to 6 p.m. And that there was, what we'd do is we would load up a CD each with our songs that we wanted to play. And Graham and I would go, we'd go song for song, playing. So we had two CD players there in the studio. When it was our turn, when we're on air, we'd go song for song and we'd talk in between, and the structure wasn't that great. It wasn't professional. It was as student radio as you get. We were choosing songs based on our favorite ones there as well, and I did have the program director go, why are you playing Craig David? And you're like, to younger audience as well, and by that time he'd been and gone and had his moment or whatever like that as well. And I was like, oh, have a throwback, which was like 3 years old at the time, and called that a throwback. And yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience. We knew nothing, and that was my introduction to media.
I think that's the thing I always find funny about your story, because I feel like, yeah, like you said, you kind of just fell into, but from that point, like where you were making that radio session, like kind of just, and you're just chatting shit with your friend, did you ever see that developing eventually into a career? Was it just like kind of like a fun thing, or was it, yeah, how did you see that eventuate? Or was it kind of, you knew from that point onwards, you're like, man, I could actually do this as a job. This is something I'd be actually keen on. Or was it kind of like, oh, this is a bit of fun, probably not, never going to touch this again?
Yeah, for me, it was probably just a bit of fun. It was almost like, this was my mate Graham's career. He was going to do that. This is what he wanted to do. He had that idea from a young age. And he was always like very sure himself that that was here, where his career was going. And for me, I was just along for the ride. I was just keeping him company and having a bit of fun as well, and helping out a mate really as well. So for me, it wasn't kind of like, this is my career, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. It was kind of, for me, sports was very much still where my like focus was and things like that as well. And then this was just a bit of fun on the side, and I did really enjoy it. It was going really well, and I really loved that space. And then I started thinking more about the content and stuff like that, and so get like naturally over time as I was doing that, I was getting more and more involved and thinking more about it and what worked and what didn't. And I was starting to kind of almost start producing the show in that way as well, and thinking a few different things there. So naturally kind of fell into that, and what can we do better? Always wanted to be the best. I'm quite competitive, so it was always there as well, of going, what can we do to improve and get better? So although I was just kind of taking it reasonably casually, I was still thinking, how can we improve, get better, and do all these things, and I'll do little tweaks and stuff like that to the show, and thinking of new content. So I was just doing that naturally. And it wasn't till later on when school was wrapping up and finishing and things like that, then careers were starting to think about it. And then that actually became quite a viable option. So then I moved into study after that, where I moved to a place called ARA to do radio and TV presenting as a course. And I was doing a certificate in that one there. Because I ended up leaving school early, so instead of going to uni, I went and did a certificate at ARA, and which has eventually merged with CPIT here. Which I did a course there, and then what happened was I did 1 year my certificate, and it was going to carry on and be a after the certificate, it was going to be a diploma, and for funding reasons, that course shut down halfway through. So I did the first part, I did a certificate. And then the second part of the course, the diploma, that was cancelled. So they kind of said to you, yeah, well done, you've done the first year, and then second year is not happening. So our class were kind of just left there kind of going, oh, geez, we've just got a certificate here. What was happening was the diploma was, you did that, and then you get your foot into the door in the industry and stuff like that as well. So that didn't really work out, and that's when I ended up going to broadcasting school after that, because they had an option to jump on and join at broadcasting school, where I finally crossed paths with you again, Jamie, after we'd kind of bumped in the corridors of Plains FM.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of a weird moment actually seeing you on that first day. And to be clear, CPIT is a polytechnic college that is obviously running out of Christchurch. New Zealand Broadcasting School being one of, I guess you could say, that the main area that a lot of people that work in the broadcasting industry go to study. Myself and Ryan were lucky enough to go. Actually want to do a little bit of a wind back as well, mate, because obviously you're talking about how you came to the end of the school year. You actually finished school a little bit earlier as well. And you had that, obviously the radio thing in mind. How were you at school, mate? Do you feel like this kind of shift into radio and media was kind of like, a nice thing to like grab onto, obviously, because, what maybe caused you to leave school early? Was there any particular reason? Just weren't interested in it? Did you feel like there was some other thing that you were more interested in? What was kind of the kicker for that?
Yeah, I was quite like easily distracted. And so when I was at school, I sometimes didn't find it too challenging and would just kind of stir up a little bit and stuff like that as well. So I used to cause a bit of trouble and used to have a bit of a laugh and just a bit of a wind up and stuff like that as well. And it was stupid, like immature things as well, like going to an all-boys school or something like that as well. Like stupid things. I remember starting a school-wide food fight from the second story of a building at one lunchtime, and it got this whole building closed off at lunch. We couldn't go in there because it was the perfect view. You looked out over the school, so apples were being launched and yogurts exploding and stuff like that as well. So typical stuff at an all-boys school, and just stirring a bit of drama. And I was just having fun there and hanging out with mates. All the classes were going well, but then eventually, I just got a bit distracted, I suppose, and hanging out with mates, and what I needed was probably a bit of direction there as well, because it was a bit of fun, really. It wasn't too much of a focus, or there wasn't a career in mind. So those early days at high school and stuff like that, I probably wasn't too focused, and I was just kind of cruising through and stuff like that. I could do well on tests and stuff like that as well without studying and be right and get through. And so I was just floating, just doing what I needed to do type thing and having a good time really as well. So I wasn't didn't have that much direction. So for me, there was a point where my final year at school, and I didn't start that, and I went and studied instead because I was just a bit distracted at school. And that was that certificate course that I went into and stuff. And that's when I thought, like, I'm not really doing too much here at school. So it was quite good to, that gave me a bit of direction there. And that's why I leaned into media there and gave me a real kind of purpose and bit of direction. And it was great. And from then on, I never looked back really as well. So I suppose I was just kind of floating out at school, just having a good time, eating my lunch and causing a bit of shit there as well with mates. So I wasn't too focused. So it was good for me to get into a career that really gave me some good direction and purpose.
Yeah, completely. I feel like you're mirroring something that my own brother has said once, that his favorite subject at school was lunch. He said it was the best. He was always pretty good at it. But I find it really interesting that, like, kind of you kind of arrive to that moment when you're studying, obviously, actually getting into the zone of broadcasting, studying at ARDA, that you felt like you're finally in the right place. And did you feel like once you made that jump as well to attending broadcasting school as well, which is obviously even more fun or even more finite in terms of the focus, did you feel like you were in the right place? Do you feel like this is where I know this is exactly where I want to be after obviously all those previous moments with radio and other things like that. Is that kind of how it turned out, or was there a bit more to it?
Yeah, for sure. Because at school, I was doing like a wide range of things, and some you're interested in, some you weren't as well. I did like heaps of sport courses and stuff like that as well, like sports leadership and things like that I'd love. And then I'd do classical studies, which I wasn't so interested in as well. And so you'd be in and out of focus type thing as well for me. And I love delving into something and doing really well at it. So when I was at broadcasting school, it was something I was passionate about, loved doing as well. And so then by that stage, I'd had my own show with the Graham Ryan show there as well. I'd done a little bit of study elsewhere with that certificate course. And by the time I was at the New Zealand Broadcasting School, I was, for me, this is a career I wanted. I was very focused in on that as well. So from then on, it was easy to focus there as well. It was something I was passionate about, something I enjoyed, and something I had fun doing as well, and saw as a career for myself. So for there, I had none of those issues I had at high school. Which the focus issues and being bored and not being committed really as well. So when I was at broadcasting school, though there was 20 of us in the class, we'd made it through the selection process as well, where they'd culled about half the people there as well. And it was, so you'd earned that spot there as well. You had a good opportunity and it was your pathway forward into a career. So for me, that was, the focus wasn't an issue after that as well. So I was dialed in and I was ready to go. So my whole perspective changed once I was in there compared to being at school. It was completely different, really.
Yeah, I can totally understand where you're coming from in that. And also the other sense, do you feel like you moving eventually into your role as a producer was kind of fostered at broadcasting school? Because obviously, you could probably attest to this. Like you said, there's 20 of us that end up getting selected to go into broadcasting school. Myself and Ryan obviously attended. A lot of us don't always necessarily know what we're going there for. We just know we want to work in radio. Do you feel like your journey into being a producer was there from the get-go, or do you feel like it was something you kind of picked up along the way because you realized like this is the natural area that I feel like I fall into? Or how do you think it kind of came about that you eventually fell into producing?
Yeah, for me it was almost similar to how I got into radio. I fell into it really for that one there. So it wasn't my plan, but I was naturally doing things that were in the style of a producer anyway. We had to go into different shows and stuff like that. And you and I, Jamie, did a show at night times on a student station there. It was called Banter with Jamie and Ryan, and we'd do a show there. And I was pitching you very random ideas for what we could do for a show and different themes and different ideas and stuff like that as well. And some were ridiculous and stupid. I remember one time I planned a thing where we took open callers on, hypothetically, if you were to rob a bank, how would you do it? And we had some people texting and calling through, and we did a whole segment. It ended up being about far too long. It was about an hour on how you would rob a bank hypothetically on air, and we're doing this at night time, and we had great engagement. And I was thinking through, and it was just different ways to do things and different content and things like that. And so I was naturally kind of producing, planning, working on content and stuff like that as well, and doing those things naturally. Pitching those ideas to you and things like that as well on the content side of it. And a bit of structure on that too. So even though the structure was very loose, but I was already kind of pitching naturally doing those things during our show and during broadcasting school. And we didn't actually have at New Zealand Broadcast School, there wasn't a specific area that focused on producing. That wasn't part of it then. It is now. You can actually do a major in producing where in our time that wasn't part of it. So it wasn't until we had some industry professionals come and speak to us, and they had interviews with us, trying to figure out some placements and things like that, that I ended up in a room talking to them. And I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, Jamie, but we had they put all 20 of us in a list of random order, and we had to go and sit in. Had 10 minutes with these industry professionals to talk to them, and we had 10 minutes there, and my name came first up on the list. So I went in there blind, where at least when I had an interview, I could come and tell you guys what to expect and what it was like.
Yeah.
So I went in there blind. I was the first name on there. And what I did was I grabbed my book. I used to have a little notebook, if you remember, Jamie, of ideas and different content ideas.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yep.
Write down things we could do for a show. Could be a topic, or could be a competition. It could be promotion. Whatever it was, I used to have a little book there that I'd write down ideas and just jot down stuff and had that. So I took that with me. I went into the meeting and I said to the two industry professionals, I just said, I've got some ideas here I'd love to run by you and get your thoughts on. And they said, oh, perfect. And then so we spent the entire 10 minutes, I'd say an idea, and we'd chat through, and they're like, oh, you could do this with it, you could have this with it. And they were getting my ideas, and we were just like going through, like doing a brainstorm type thing as well. And then we'd go through the list, and we were going through these ones here, and they got really involved. And like, oh, that sounds fun. And they were both like, almost like lit up their eyes, like they were in a, these guys were like heads of networks and different stations, but then they were like almost like they were part of a promo team or a
like kids on-air almost. Team.
Yeah, and we were just doing that. It was like, oh, time's up type thing. So then I went back, and it was the day after that I got a phone call asking, they said, we can't tell you what station, but would you be interested in doing some producing nationally for us moving up to Auckland? I said, yep, count me in. So that was
I was going to ask you, mate. Is that honestly how it came about? Was from that one conversation, that one presentation with your book of ideas, that's how that call came about?
Yeah, well, so what we did was after that, we went out with them that afternoon, and from memory had a lunch or a couple of drinks type thing and chatted to them and stuff like that as well, the guys from the industry. And then so we talked further, and they got to know you a little bit better as well. But that was the real catalyst for it for me as well. And that's how I got into producing. They saw my ideas and stuff like that as well from there. So like how I got into radio, it wasn't necessarily planned. I kind of fell into that as well. So that's how I originally got into producing. I got offered an internship there, and it was, so that came about through my ideas. So again, just fell into that naturally.
I think that's incredible, mate, because I think this is the thing I'm probably going to find the longer I do these conversations, that it is an element of obviously being in the right place at the right time, but also just having the kind of courage to kind of stand up there in that moment. Because like you said, you were the first one there. You had no warning. You just kind of had to go in and kind of show off your stuff. I think a lot of other people in that situation might have crumbled, but you just took it by the balls and really just like dove straight in. Do you kind of look back on that moment now and realize, like, if you hadn't have done it that way, that maybe things could have turned out completely differently for you and your career? Do you think that kind of moment was quite pivotal in getting you to where you are today?
It's a bit of both with that one, really. I feel like, because it was quite lucky, in right place, right time worked out really well for that. But all that content, I think back to when I was doing the student show, and I was thinking of content there, and I was coming up with ideas, and I used to pitch ideas and I'd write them down. And then when we were doing our show together as well, and all through there, I was always coming up with ideas, writing ideas and thinking about content. So there was years in the making of that from when I was 15 to, at that point, maybe 19 there as well. So it might have been about 4 years of collating ideas, thinking through things and going through different content and actually strategizing and working on the content in that way. So then when I was pitching these ideas, it was probably 4 years worth of build up into that point. So when I was pitching the ideas in that meeting, it wasn't just I pulled out a book and here's some ideas I've come up with now. These were things that were, so they had a bit more direction to those ideas and things like that. So the stuff I was pitching would have helped me there as well. So it was lucky in the sense of the timing, but it wasn't lucky in the sense of what I was pitching and the ideas I gave to them. That's what got them so energized and involved and stuff like that as well. Because there was some stuff that like, oh, I've never heard that before type thing as well. I was pitching just lots of different things like that as well. So yeah, it was definitely lucky in that sense, but not lucky in another sense, if that makes sense.
Because I should also add, on top of what Ryan's been saying, is that like, obviously the broadcasting school in New Zealand, where we went, there was kind of industry known that that's where they picked a lot of fresh talent. So you being yourself and obviously having a lot of these fresh ideas that you've been, like you said, working on the background for many years, that's kind of the stuff that they're always looking for. And it was kind of almost like a breeding ground for finding people that obviously have probably got the right stuff already, but put into the right environment, which is really cool, man. Because I think that was the thing I was always really impressed by with you, is that I felt like you always had something up your sleeve in a sense of like you were always thinking of another idea or another way of building off an idea that's already existing to make it even better. And I guess that will take me to the next question, like, how did it feel when you did receive that news? Because obviously this is like coming from Ryan Foster, started off doing a bit of a jokey sort of radio show with his mate on Plains FM, to now obviously you end up being given the role of like working on one of the leading networked music radio stations in New Zealand. Like, how was that for you, mate? How was that moment? Like, what did it feel like, obviously, coming from that?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was just like, it was a phone call that I got a for a random number, picked up the phone call and essentially said to me, would you, we're impressed with our interview with you and love what you had to offer and your ideas. We can see you working in this industry and working alongside us. They said, though, we've got an idea in mind. Would you be willing to move to Auckland? There's an opportunity here to produce for a network show. We can't tell you which show because we're going through some chats at the moment. And I said, yep, okay. And they said you'd have to leave broadcasting school early. And so I'd have to do some of the stuff from distance. So just like leaving school early, left broadcast, New Zealand Broadcasting School early then as well. And so I ended up finishing that course from distance. So it was amazing use to get. And it felt like, because when I went to broadcasting school, that's when I was super dialed in on what I wanted. And then I got this opportunity here as well. So jumped at it and turned out it was what I was being offered was someone was going on maternity leave for 6 months. So I had it lined up perfectly with an internship. So at the end of New Zealand Broadcasting School, we do a 6 month internship to complete our degree. So what they did is I just moved that forward and I left early to do my 6 month internship there. And it worked perfectly when they had someone for maternity cover. So it might have just aligned there as well. And it was good timing for me. So what happened was went up there and for me, I saw there's a chance to kind of prove myself. I had 6 months here where I was had an awesome role here. So they said, you'll be producing the breakfast show for MyFM, the largest hip-hop and R&B station in New Zealand. So, and they said, you'll be producing that for 6 months. So for me, I just saw that as like an awesome opportunity as well. But also a little bit daunting in the we hadn't done producing. It wasn't, like I said, something we studied. So all of a sudden, I'm producing a big network show that's a big machine that's rolling and stuff like that as well. And that was my first real job in radio and straight into a big network show, producing that with some experienced people, working with them and stuff like that. So I was 100% thrown into the deep end for that one there. So it was very much a sink or swim audition there. And I had 6 months to really kind of prove myself and get a career. And that was a real trial by fire. And it was awesome. I loved it. I loved the opportunity.
How does like your family react? Or for example, obviously your now wife, Nikki, because like we should also add, Nikki actually studied with us as well. Ryan's wife was obviously studying the same degree, worked in radio herself as well. What were the reactions from the family and obviously your now wife when they found out you're obviously got this massive role? That's just like, what was the reaction?
Yeah, no, everyone was stoked, supportive and happy for me as well. And I was supportive of my wife. Girlfriend at the time as well. If she'd had that opportunity as well, I would say go do it, that's what we're studying for, and go and stuff like that as well. So everyone was super supportive, super happy, and it all happened pretty quick. And then I was trying to find somewhere to stay up in Auckland, and so I was in a hostel somewhere for a few weeks, and I was just up there and had to figure it out later on and stuff like that. So I went up there and just straight into it really. And then I had to figure out essentially what I was doing as well, because like I said, hadn't done producing before. So I'd just done things naturally in our careers of doing some on-air stuff as well. Like I'd done a lot of the planning and the content and things like that as well. So that kind of side of it. But I had to learn a lot of it on the fly. And I remember going there and there was when the system we used there, when we were using NextGen for radio, the system there, when we did our show together, Jamie, you were actually in charge of that when we did our show together. And I was pretty much hands off, and I was a co-host and you were the anchor there as well. And you were using a lot of NextGen there as well. So for me, I probably hadn't used that enough because you were so good at that. And I'd kind of left, which actually was a good learning point there as well, to do a bit more in that sense. So I remember when I first started at MyFM, I was trying to grab off a bit of audio. I was a little bit slow and I wasn't as happy as I was with it. So what I would do is I'd spend probably about an hour every day after I'd done the show, or once I'd finished all my stuff, I'd stay an extra hour every single day just practicing on NextGen as well, just going through ins and out shortcuts, just doing everything and just learning it as much as I could every single day. When I was there, so I'd do full day producing the show, doing everything we did after the show, and then I'd stay behind for at least an hour just practicing, just like on there, just literally on the tools, just practicing. I did it every single day for like a month almost, just practicing, became everything became second nature. And now like it was just so good that I became so quick with everything as well, because I just wanted to skill up and get to the level I needed to be there. But that was very much on the job. And then after that, I'd go home and I was doing some broadcasting school stuff there as well, because I was doing it from distance. So we had to do certain things as well. So I was trying to finish my degree. So those first 6 months there was just head down, just work, just try and get a bit of reputation and really kind of earn my stripes in the industry.
Do you feel like the fact that you're put in that situation, and that was the situation you're working through, like, as you're saying, you were having to basically try, well, you didn't have to, but you chose to try and finish your degree from the broadcasting school, which basically, because you left, you had that option of continuing it or just sticking with the job role and not moving on, but you decided, no, I want to keep at this. As well as also, as you said, you were having to learn new software. You're probably having to even teach yourself a role that we haven't really been that exposed to. Do you feel like without that sort of element of kind of like hardship, do you feel like the tenacity from that, or like the kind of hardship you had from that, kind of made you appreciate the role even more, or made you work even harder because you're like, you felt like you really had to grind for it and that made it worth it? Is that kind of, do you feel like that was an element of it a little bit?
Yeah, felt like I really had to earn it as well, being the new person in there as well and stuff like that. And it was a network show, was performing reasonably well at the time when I went in there. I wanted to match that level and I didn't want to let anyone down. So I remember just working as hard as I could, and literally just like, even I sold my car to move up there, and I couldn't afford a car up there and stuff like that. So I used to walk. So I'd start at kind of 4:30 in the morning each morning, and then I would be walking about half an hour, sometimes in the rain up this hill, I remember, stuff like that as well. And I'd be, so at 4 a.m. I'm just like getting coated, walking in the rain, just up this hill there in the dark as well, through like winter sometimes as well, going up there. And like, I remember just like, even that was heading to work, and I'd turn up like drenched and stuff like that as well, and like just really earning it and stuff like that as well. And I'd do massive days, and then I'd be doing my stuff afterwards, just like focusing on trying to get better. And then I've been doing broadcasting school stuff after that as well, so just slogging away, really earning it and stuff like that as well. And that way was, I just wanted to not let anyone down, but also not let myself down. I'd been given this opportunity, so I wasn't gonna just kind of chill there. I made sure I worked hard and earned it. And one thing that did was earn respect from people as well. They saw how hard I worked and the effort I was putting in and stuff like that as well. So it only really good things for me in my career there as well. But I think if you've got an opportunity, you've really just got to take it. And that's what I had there. I had an opportunity. It wasn't a guaranteed job there at the end of it either. There wasn't actually a job at the end of it, because the lady who I was covering for on maternity leave was coming back to her role as well. So for me, it was just, I had 6 months to just really show what I can do. And that's what I did. I made sure I worked hard, didn't let anyone down, and tried my best there as well, and was proposing ideas. I was trying to do things and pitch ideas and work really hard. And I was, just put everything into those 6 months and made sure that I didn't waste my opportunity that I got.
Did you feel like you had to become a bit of an everyman? Because like you're saying, you're obviously running the desk, you're doing the ideas and everything else. Do you feel like you probably went above and beyond in terms of what maybe a normal producer would do at that time? Because I know obviously the role of a producer has changed over the last few years. Like now, I'd probably say you can probably speak more volumes on this now, because I'm out of the loop of obviously the New Zealand producing industry and what it's like in radio now. But obviously I see like a lot more producers now getting involved in even things like social media, obviously doing video on top of obviously the day-to-day of doing the live, running the desk, obviously taking the calls and other things like that and running the content. Do you feel like that was kind of what happened to you when you were entering? You were like, I'm going to take on as much as I can, learn as much as I can, but also that was kind of like the way that you proved that you were like valuable to them, because mate, like that's obviously the reason why you stuck around for so long there, is, and the reason that you've had such a long career.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I loved taking on extra things, and always that goes back to even Plains FM days on that community radio station as well. What can we do better, what can we improve and stuff like that, not just sitting on a level and stuff like that. I'd love to just try and level up and do better, and what else can we do? And I remember looking across the hall, so so My FM was right next to the Edge. And I remember they had, for their breakfast show, they had two producers. So they had a content producer, and then they had an interview producer as well, who would work on callers, interviews and stuff like that as well, and chasing up and sorting that. And then it was more they had two different producers. One would do technical, and when they got different roles in, they'd kind of switch around and stuff like that. But I always remember they had kind of two producers covering a whole different range of things, where it was just me for us as well. Yeah. We were trying to compete with them and stuff like that as well. So I was already doing, I was looking across the year and going, sweet, I'm doing all of this type thing as well. So I thought I had to work extra hard against like the competition. It wasn't our direct competition, but they were in there as well. So I was doing everything there as well. And then I was trying to take on extra things as well. And at that stage, it was just me living up here, up in Auckland. I'd flown up and I had all this time. So I spent a lot of time and put in heaps of effort, was probably working crazy hours to make it work. But I was, took on social media there as well. And I remember looking at our direct competition, which is a station called Flavor, which is another hip hop and R&B station. I remember looking at their Facebook page and going, they've got 60,000 followers. We've got 57,000. We need to get over them and stuff like that as well. So I remember doing that. And then I remember working on that goal. And then I remember when we cracked, say, 100,000, we'd left them well behind on that, on social media and stuff like that, which is awesome. And now it's up to 350,000, the page now. I've all truly left my FM there as well. But yeah, I remember thinking there and being competitive in that aspect, we need to do better. So I was working on social media and I was trying different things. And so it was always for me, what else can we do better? What can we do more? And I was taking on heaps of that myself. But also the team I worked with was really good. So there was the original show I started on, there was a guy, it was Nixon and Nate, and they were, when I started, we were looking for a third co-host. So that was part of my introduction into it as well, was that hiring process and finding someone there as well. So we did a pretty open call to anyone to join and be part of the team. But Nixon, who I was working with there, who was the anchor of the show, he was very much an ideas guy and loved pushing things and doing extra stuff as well, which is awesome to work alongside someone who was like-minded. And we both would always be like, what can we do better? What else can we do? Who can we talk to? What can we improve on? And he was very much driving that. Sometimes it'd be in the afternoon, I get a phone call from him going, hey, I've got an idea. Why don't we do this type thing here as well? And we'd been doing the show, which was like 6 a.m. till 10 a.m., but it'll be the after, it'll be 4:30 in the afternoon. And he'd give me a call. Oh, it's just what I've got. Like, I've got an idea here. And he'd pitch me something there as well. So it was awesome to work with someone who was like me with the ideas and stuff like that. Nixon was very much inspired and wanted to do lots of things and be creative and try different things out. So it was awesome to find someone straight away in my career who was like-minded. So I wasn't pushing too much uphill. We were actually just both going in the same direction there. So that actually was pretty handy.
Yeah, because I was actually going to build off that as well, because the role of the producer is obviously to support the talent, usually. And in that sense, did you feel like it was kind of like a switch around in the other way? Because, yeah, you're young, you're coming into the industry, you're trying to find your legs, you're trying to get your style and everything else. Do you feel like guys like Nixon kind of played that role of actually supporting you as well by being there to kind of build you up, knowing that, like, yeah, they can see that you're fresh to the boat, but they can obviously impart some stuff to you? Do you feel like those guys were a big part of, like, kind of the longevity you've had in your career in terms of, like, as a support network? Or I guess in general, who were your biggest supporters when you came in at the beginning?
Yeah, when I first started in, there was, my boss was DJ Severe, was Phil was the boss of My FM, and he was always great to chat to, and if I needed to have a conversation or pick his brain, he was always great for that one there as well. Nixon, who I worked with, like I said, the first time we met, he saw that I told him what I majored in at New Zealand Broadcasting School, and I said creative writing was one of the things, and he goes, awesome, I love ideas, if you've got stuff to come up with and stuff, pitch them. And he said, don't be shy to kind of say your ideas, and I said, sweet, wasn't going to be with that as well. I love pitching ideas as well, that's what I've been doing all the time. That was kind of, that worked perfect. And he was the same as well, if he had an idea, he'd pitch it. So they were two great supports, I think, from there as well. So yeah, DJ Severe if I needed in the air, and also Nixon as well was great for that aspect as well. So like I said, we were like-minded in that sense there as well. So I'd always throw ideas and he was willing to listen and see if it could work and stuff like that as well. And I was the same as well. He'd pitch an idea and I'd go, all right, wonder if we can make that happen. I'll do my best and let's try and figure this out and how we can do it. So I think we were both, good supports for each other in that sense there as well. Because he always wanted to do things and people would often say, no, we can't do that, or it's too crazy or something like that. And I was always just like, yeah, let's try it. Let's see if it works or not as well. And give it a go. We were both very like-minded and ambitious in our ideas. So I think that worked really well as a team. And Nixon and I had a really good relationship as a team for about 6 years. And even now, he'll call me, and we haven't worked together for probably 3.5 years now as well. He'll call me and randomly pitch an idea or say something like that as well. And like, yeah, and we still have a great relationship. He was the MC for my wedding as well. So it's just been in March as well. So yeah, no, so we've still got a great relationship in that sense there. But yeah, in a working relationship, I think we were great support for each other for about, the years I was at Mai, we were great with ideas and pitching things and trying things as well. So it was good to find someone who I connected with in that sense on a work level that we could just go, let's go for it. Let's try this idea.
And speaking about connection, because it's kind of moving into my next question, and maybe this might be a bit left field. For any of the listeners or anyone who's obviously watching this, might not know that MyFM was obviously a hip-hop and R&B station, which is primarily targeted towards, obviously, Pacifica or people from the Maori community. And obviously, if you're listening to this, you'll probably, or maybe if you can hear it in Ryan's tone, he's very white, and we're from the South. I'm from Christchurch, which isn't maybe the most like highly dense populated area with lots of Maori and Pacifica people. How did you find it going into a station where that is the audience and you're having to find a way to relate to that audience? Did you feel like that was a challenge early on, or did you feel like because of the fact that you have such great talent that you can kind of bounce off to get ideas, that kind of worked in your favor? Or do you feel like from day dot, you kind of already knew where you were going with it? Because I feel like that can be quite a hard thing producing any show, no?
Yeah, for sure. I think, like you said, grew up in Christchurch in a very kind of just, not a very, I wasn't too exposed to different ethnicities or anything like that as well. It was just like, we just put our head down, played some rugby, and it was just like I said, Christchurch wasn't like, for me, I didn't travel too much either as a kid or anything like that. But when I was, for me, it never really seemed like a challenge as well, trying to fit into a mold or anything like that as well. I guess the best I could say is just, I was talking every day, people on the phone while producing as well. And I was talking to the audience every single day on the phone, getting all these phone calls and talking to people and just having a laugh, having banter, putting them on air and chatting to them and stuff like that as well. I was just constantly in contact with our audience. I felt like I knew our audience at MyFM really well, because I'm chatting to you now. I was just chatting to people the whole time, and just like, I loved that aspect of, and like I said, some different shows, you'd have a producer who was just on the phones and one who was doing some, maybe the engineering side of it or the production side of it, where I was doing about everything. So I was constantly on the phones talking to our audience all morning long, every morning, Monday to Friday. I was just on the phones talking to our audience. I felt like I connected really well and understood our audience and the people who listened to MyFM, because I was constantly on the phones when we're going out to events and I'm chatting to people and stuff like that as well. And I feel like I was just always talking to the audience, and also on social media too, when I was posting things there as well and be replying to comments and stuff like that, and seeing how people were engaging, what they reacted with and stuff like that. So I felt like for me, that was the best way to understand the audience, was just talking to people and listening to people and interacting and just really involving myself in that. And then, like going to events and chatting to people and seeing people face to face and our listeners. And it was, for me, that wasn't a challenge at all. I just thought I was in there and just involved with everyone. That was just a good way to be a part of it. And that didn't seem like a challenge for me, trying to fit into a different mold or whatever like that as well. I was just experiencing it.
Yeah, totally. And going off experience as well, like the experience of obviously managing a team, because this is the thing, you've just come out of university, you're going into an area where you've never been before, really, Auckland. You're going up to, so Auckland being like the big mecca, I guess, of broadcasting, radio, TV and everything else in between. You're managing a team of guys that are basically industry giants at that point. They've been around for a couple of years, they're very well intertwined. In terms of you entering into that field of Mai, what do you think were the biggest challenges for you? Because obviously there were things along the way, but what do you think was the most challenging thing for you working in that first job?
Yeah, I think it was the first 6 months were, well, actually it was probably the first 2 months I found a real challenge. Because it was a station that was operating quite highly and they were doing lots of things where I was just fresh into that job. And you think when you're new into any job, you're figuring things out as well. But the train was going like that and I was trying to jump on, like it wasn't going to stop for me type thing. So yeah, I found it probably a bit of a challenge to try and keep up at the start and try and, I had all these ideas, but little things like, I remember, Nixon had said something on air about wanting to box someone, and I said, oh, sweet, let's get a big inflatable boxing ring and do it in the courtyard here at work, and let's do this and do that. And I said to our promotions team, hey, can we do some of this? And they're like, oh, we can't do the turnaround, we've got all this, and all these obstacles in the way and things like that, where I didn't know how the industry worked in that sense. So I just had some ideas and stuff like that as well, and all the behind the scenes and things like that. So I remember, like, sometimes the ideas were all there, but there were certain roadblocks, and I did a lot of problem solving. And but yeah, sometimes it was just had to kind of find the reality of how things worked in the industry and how other roles worked in the industry, because you're not an island. You've got a team around you, and you've got to work with your team and to make sure everything works for them, and how you can all work together and stuff like that as well. Where I was probably at the time myself, yeah, I can do it all. So it was probably the first kind of couple months of figuring it all out and stuff like that. And that was quite tough, just trying to be at a high level. You want to be doing the best you can, but also you don't know everything. So especially how things work. And yeah, so for me, the first couple months were quite tough in that sense there as well. I wanted to be the best I could, but still learning a lot of stuff, and you're new into any role. And that was my first job in radio. So I had to kind of find out how things worked in the real world, really, not just our student station. So it was, yeah, it was challenging for the first couple months there as well. And finding that, because especially myself being competitive, I wanted to be the best, wanted to be good. And then, it was finding my feet for that little bit, but having a positive attitude. And I found it tough there as well, not being as good as I could be. And that was purely because I was quite new there as well, and it was really figuring out myself in the industry and how it all worked.
Do you feel like there was a little bit of like imposter syndrome when you first entered? Were you kind of like feeling like, am I ready for this? Or like, because you're saying like there was a lot of catching up to do, but really you were doing it. And was it just you feel like it was like an element of like you were kind of saying like, there's so much more I still need to prove, even though I'm guessing a lot of other people around you were probably saying like, Ryan, you're doing great, like you're doing everything plus more. Do you feel like it was a little bit of like you were hard on yourself, like more than other people were, like, or do you think like there was still that area that you were needing to climb?
Yeah, I think I was doing a lot of like internal review there as well. So yeah, a lot of that was through myself saying, could I do this better? Could I do this better here? Which something we like at the moment, I'm part of a mentor network here for MediaWorks company I work for at the moment, where I mentor younger people in the industry as well and help them give a bit of direction and being that ear to them as well. So I've been doing that and mentoring some people there. Probably there wasn't much of that when I first joined. I was very much left to my own devices, a lot of it as well. So, which would have been beneficial for me to have a mentor or someone there in my early stages. But I didn't necessarily have that actually. So I was doing a lot of learn on the job and as you go. So that was one thing there. And then being away from New Zealand Broadcasting School, where I was doing my internship, was through them obviously as well. But they were in Christchurch and there wasn't too much of a crossover there as well. I mean, you'd have a checkup maybe after 3 months or something like that. So very much I probably needed at that stage probably someone, what we have now in the industry and stuff like that as well, probably didn't have that. So a lot of it was self-reflection and trying to get better myself and analyzing what I was doing and what I could do as well. So most of the judging was coming from myself really, and that's why like I made sure I stayed extra in myself and wanted to get better at the system and get better at things. And that was all driven by myself. That was just self-reflection and stuff like that as well. So I think, so the industry 10 years ago, what we were doing then at Media was probably is a lot better now. But yeah, no, I was very much left to my own devices there as well. And so I think that, yeah, I was critiquing myself a lot and yeah, basically giving myself feedback. And we did have a little bit of that as well. We had a talent coach there, but his focus was mainly on the show and everything like that as well there. So that the personal development and stuff like that as well was just probably a little bit on my own there as well. So that was one thing that I wanted to get better and better, and that actually helped me on self-reflection and improving.
Yeah, definitely. And I think in the same respect as well, sometimes challenges and obstacles can also help you make improvements in yourself and not only kind of how you take things going forward. And we were talking about this a little bit off air, but you obviously had your own challenges in the sense of like 2 years into your role, you guys had to make a pretty massive shift in terms of the show, with one of the main hosts obviously leaving and obviously your involvement in obviously making that change as well. how do you think that kind of influenced the rest of your career? Because obviously being a producer, you're working with these guys, these hosts, like a lot of the time you're waking up in the morning with them, you're seeing them every day, they're basically becoming your friends. In terms of that situation, which we'll dive into a bit further, how do you feel that kind of changed your perspective on everything? Because I'm sure it did going forward. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the setup of the show that I was in for MyFM, when I first started, it was Nixon and Nate that both worked together on stations before. They worked together on another station, Flavor, and they'd known each other and they'd been on the show a couple of years together already. So they had a really tight knit and they were good friends. They even started broadcasting school together, well, their version of it up north in Auckland. So they'd known each other for years. So those two were very close and very tight as well. So I was the outsider coming in there. So I had to really earn my stripes and get their respect. And then when I first started, there was basically my first job there, part of the team. We were looking for a co-host because the previous host had just left as I was starting to move to another career. And then so we spent the first month as well also looking for a co-host. We had listeners come in and host the show for an hour at a time. Each morning we did certain things and we had this girl, Lily, join us and she was amazing. And then so we had Nixon, Nate, Lily. That's a show I worked with. And we went from kind of middle of the market to we had some amazing years and got to the number one show in Auckland. And we held that for about 6 years there and biggest market in New Zealand. And we had some real good success. But that team there with Nixon, Nate, Lily was working really well. It was working awesome. It was just all going super well. And then we had, and it felt like it was all going perfect. We had a really good team there together. I worked really well with all three of them. And so our whole team of four was going really well and was all kind of flying high. And then, we had originally Lily left and then she moved overseas to live in America. And then that was changing the dynamic there. We had something that was going so well and it was all really perfect. And then we had to find someone else into that dynamic. So, we had another girl, Tegan, start up with us, who's still there now today on the Wine Morning Crew show. And it was really awesome. For me, I saw that as an opportunity to improve, like because Tegan had some different skill sets to Lily. And so when she started, we were like, oh, what can we do differently here and what suits her personality and stuff like that. So it was a way for the show to evolve. And that was actually a really positive thing. We had an awesome time with Lily and she was ready to move on, and then when Tegan started, so it was a really awesome thing there as well. And having someone new there and going for something a little bit daunting of someone new starting and changing the whole dynamic, it actually worked out really well because we focused on the positives and what Tegan could offer and what we could do differently. But while that was all happening in the background, we had Nate, one of the longtime announcers there on the show. He was going through some issues which he's documented as well in his own podcast, the Nixon Nate podcast, where he had some trouble with the law and ended up going to prison for a little bit and stuff like that as well. And that was all happening in the background, which is tough on a young producer like myself. I was reasonably new into the industry, first job still there as well. And dealing with that while we were presenting a show on air, we're going through a change of hosts with Lily to Tegan. And that was all happening at the same time that Nate was having some legal issues and things like that were happening behind the scenes. So we were having to deal with that one. And that fell a lot on myself and Nixon, who had been there with Nate and stuff like that. So while that transition of hosts was happening as well, a lot of that fell onto Nixon and I. And especially Nixon, he was probably carried the most of that because they had such a close relationship and stuff like that. So he was hearing a lot more of what was going on and we were hearing a little bit more, and that was a tough challenge as well for a producer trying to keep a show, the number one show in Auckland, and doing reasonably well around the country, and trying to keep it a high level while a lot of stuff's going on behind the scenes. And there, because of what was going on as well, there were mornings where Nate wouldn't turn up till the show started at 6 a.m. on air. Sometimes he wouldn't turn up till 10 past 7 and things like that as well. When he'd go missing, we couldn't get him on the phones and stuff like that as well. So that was quite a challenging time as someone younger as well, I was, yeah, early 20s there as well. And these guys have been in the industry for a decade and really knew their stuff. And the thing was, the show was operating at a high level there as well while this was all going on behind the scenes and stuff like that. So it was quite a challenging time. And while things were being worked through and stuff like that, we had to present a good face on air as well. So I remember I pitched to Nixon how we turned that into a positive. One time we started taking bets on air of you could text through what time you think Nate would arrive in, and I'd got prizes from the prize cupboard and I'd give them out. So if he was late one morning while things were going on in the background and stuff like that as well, say he wasn't there one morning, we'd say, all right, open up the text line as well. We'd text rolling through. Someone would say 6:30 a.m. The next text would come through for 6:34 and 7:15, and the first person to text in the right answer, I'd award them a prize for when he arrived in. And we kind of, when he arrived in, we'd celebrate, and then we'd be like, all right, congrats too. And I'd pass the name of the winner on to Nixon to read out on air and stuff like that as well. And it became a bit of a guessing game and stuff like that as well. But we were trying to make the best of a bad situation, and the fact that there's quite a few things going on behind the scenes with Nate there as well, and we had to keep a show going and had to integrate into a new host, and there was a lot of things happening there as well. So it was a tough time, really.
Was that kind of hard for you not to take that home with you? Because I imagine that at that time that would have been incredibly stressful. Like you said, you guys had one of the highest rated shows at the time. Obviously, you've got a lot of things going on in the background. As you said, a change of hosts, the other situation in terms of the host not turning up sometimes. Do you feel like that was really hard not to take home with you? Because I think that's maybe a big thing in industry, is obviously everyone assumes, anyone that works in the industry that's not part of it, that you go up, you do your job, and that's it. Like, do you feel like a little bit of that came home with you and you had to try and learn how to separate it? Or do you feel like at some points it did get a bit much? Like, you kind of were taking a lot of that on yourself? Because I feel like that's quite a personal relationship. Like you have with the host, you become friends with them. You, like you said, you earn their trust. And then you feel like it's kind of like turning into the situation that a lot's coming onto you. How do you handle that personally?
Yeah, well, like you said, you become friends, and Nate is one of my mates, and I've got so much respect for him, and he is like one of the most talented broadcasters I've ever worked with as well. They're just naturally like amazing. And like, there'd be times he'd come in at 7:10. I said, we had this scheduled for you here at 7:15 as well. I wasn't sure if you were going to be here or not. He's like, I've got this. All right. I'm like, no, this is not how it should be as well. But I'm like, I'll trust him. And he would do a topic that would light up the phones, everyone get involved, and it would go amazing. It's not how radio should work as well. But there were certain things where he was just naturally, he was really good. He had a real gift, Nate. He's one of the best broadcasters I've ever worked with. And I've got heaps of respect for him, and still a friend of mine and stuff like that as well. But yeah, so it's hard to leave at home though as well, because we were rating so well, and in certain situations he might have just been let go and it wouldn't, but it was going so well and the show was rating well, and it wasn't every day that was happening type thing, but it was definitely like happening a lot, but it wasn't every day. But anyway, so he was, and all the contract and the chats and the chats with the bosses were going on as well with him, and obviously there were sensitive subjects and stuff like that as well, so we weren't all included in all those chats. So he was having these discussions with bosses and what was going on, so we just, from my perspective, had to keep going and just keep the show afloat and make sure we just kept going well and rating well and doing well and putting out the best product possible. So Nixon and I were really making sure we just kept everything going really well, and it went really well. We were still rating well, went really good, and yeah, like I said, it wasn't every day, but there were, it was definitely some obstacles. And the thing of taking it home, yes, I did as well. You take it home mentally and thinking like that as well. And then all that doubt is, oh, we've got these things scheduled. Is it going to be here in the morning, or what's going to go on? Is something going to pop up and stuff like that as well? So it was an interesting time. And yes, I would take it home with me as well. And it can be quite consuming, I suppose, when you're worrying about that. You've got all these elements of the unknown happening as well, when it's your normal role and you kind of know what's happening and stuff like that as well. You can kind of leave things a bit more and know you're kind of done for the day, or whatever, you've done everything you need to do, and there's nothing that's going to be too many curveballs. But with that one there was, you'd take elements home, you'd be worried about this, and you have a contingency plan or what can happen here. And there was definitely elements of taking that home, and adds that add a bit of stress as well. But it was an interesting time, and for a young broadcaster, it was quite good, I think, as well for me, because you're throwing these obstacles, and if you can overcome that as well, makes you a better person, a better broadcaster as well. And I got definitely, it was a lot to learn from that as well. And not a common situation that most people find themselves in as well. And Nate's doing great now as well, and he does some amazing things for the community and stuff like that, and he serves some time in prison there as well. And the Nick's and Nate podcast, he talks about it all openly, and it's a great listen there as well on Spotify. And I've been listening to that and keeping up to date with the guys and messaging them as well when I hear some awesome stuff that they're doing too. So it was an interesting time for a young broadcaster, I think, in that sense there as well. And a lot of that was behind the scenes. You couldn't talk about that or couldn't have that openly on air, so we just had to carry on and do our best. And Nixon was an amazing support for that as well. DJ Severe, my boss at the time, sometimes just take me out and we'd go. I remember one time we went and got some burger fuel just to have a bit of a break midday, and we were just sitting there just having some burger fuel just down the road, and just, we didn't even talk too much. We were just like, when it was quite intense and stuff like that as well. So he was a good support there. Nixon was as well, and both the co-hosts during that time as well. Tegan and Lily were great when things were going on and stuff like that. We just had to keep going. And Nate, when he was there and turning up, was awesome and did some good stuff as well. There were just a few different issues behind the scenes, but interesting time. And that whole time we kept it professional on air and kept it good, and the show was rating, and we were still out doing awesome things like that as well. It was just a interesting time.
Well, in that sense, I guess we should pivot to the other side then. What do you think was like the moment for you that you kind of realized, like, man, I'm actually doing this, show's going really well? Like, what was there a particular moment for you or waypoint in your career particularly? Because I'm like, we'll go into obviously the breeze a little bit as well, but was there any particular point in your career that you're like, man, I made it, like, this is where I wanted to be. I feel like I've really hit that point that I wanted to get to. What moment was that for you?
It was just a gradual build. I remember we sat in a meeting room one time. We were planning out at the start of the year, and we sat with this Australian consultant and another consultant, and we planned out what we wanted to do for the year and stuff like that. And we said we wanted to be the number one show in Auckland, and we had this goal there, and we wanted to do that and reach that. And when we achieved that, it was like something we'd set out to do, and we actually made that happen. And then we started to grow some traction online as well, and you started to see some stuff there as well. The phones were getting busier and stuff like that, and the show built up and built up, and it just snowballed. And we had, it was a gradual build there. Which was pretty quick, really. We kind of turned around and we changed up and did a few things once Lily had got on board and the show, and it really did awesome. We got some great ratings, and then you started to notice more things and stuff like that. And then we started getting some recognition, and we got made a finalist for the what's it called, we ended up winning MyFM1 Station of the Year at the New Zealand Radio Awards as well. And that was probably, that might have been the moment when we won Station of the Year. MyFM had never done it before, and we had a big party that night celebrating as well. But that was probably the pinnacle of we'd been working hard, and we'd been working to do this, and we'd had plans in place, and well, this was all going on in the background. But there was, when we won Station of the Year at the New Zealand Radio Awards, that was probably the pinnacle, and that was the moment we're going, awesome, we've done a good job here.
Yeah, because I think that's incredible how you've managed to take the station that's obviously never really rated that highly, it has, but you guys have taken it to that next level. Like, it must have been an incredible feeling. And on top of that as well, obviously I should add that something I found really interesting that you released, I think it was about 5 years ago, maybe now, you ended up taking part in a challenge to obviously learn your Pepeha, which for anyone who isn't from New Zealand that's listening to this, it's a traditional form of greeting. And Māori, I know you guys, I think you were nominated for an award for best content as well for that alone. But to give context for this, Ryan recorded a documentary where he was learning Māori language. My being obviously a predominantly Māori and also Pacific Islander audience based. You obviously learned this as kind of like a journey to kind of understanding not only the audience, but the people that work at the station that you're working at. So like kind of walk me through a little bit of that, because that in itself is pretty interesting. What was the kicker for you that you're like, I really want to learn this, I really want to do this? And kind of like, how do you feel after obviously going through that experience of learning a little bit more about the culture?
Yeah, so it was a mate of mine there who worked at MyFM, who was our online editor, and Nikora. So Nick's they called him, but him and I would, he'd come and sit in my studio, and he was our online editor, so he'd do all our videos and our website and everything like that as well. So he'd come and sit into my production studio where I was producing from, and we used to just like work together and would throw ideas back and forth and stuff like that. Sometimes we'd just play a bit of music and just just sometimes we're like, yeah, we'd just we used to get on really well, me and Neeks. And then it was coming up to Māori Language Week in New Zealand, and he had this idea. So Neeks kind of said to me the idea, and I said, yeah, I'd love to do that as well. Like, I have a real appreciation for Māori culture and history here in New Zealand and everything like that as well, and always willing to learn and do something as well. So he said, cool. And we chatted through this idea and had a bit of a plan in place. And I had to, the idea was to learn my pepeha and perform it in front of the whole of my FM. And yeah, it was really just, for me, it was an amazing experience, understand the culture more as well, but also showing my team and showing my and the listeners in the audience as well, that appreciation there I had. And I was willing to work for it and stuff like that as well, and wanted to make my mate Neeks proud as well, who had the idea, and he put a lot into that as well. So he did all the filming for it as well, which was nominated, made top three, was finalist for best video at the New Zealand Radio Awards there as well. So he did the video, he came up with the idea for me, and we were doing it together in that studio there as well. So it was an awesome effort, and I was trying to make Neeks proud, and also really shown my appreciation for the Māori culture. And it was awesome experience as well, learning that. As I remember I was just practicing, and I was Hemi, who was a Māori language coach as well, and lecturer at university, and he was giving me advice and teaching me too. And at that time I had a stag do down in Wellington for a friend, and I remember flying down in the plane, and I was just reading over my PPR, trying to memorize, trying to learn and work on pronunciation as well. And I had a stag do, and I was on flight back as well, and I was just going on the plane there as well, and I was at home, and I was just practicing and stuff like that. And then I stood up in front of the whole of my FM and said my PPR, and it was a really cool moment there as well. And I've, as a white guy from Christchurch, my exposure to Māori language was almost zero here, and growing up and stuff like that as well. So it took a lot of learning for me as well with the pronunciation and stuff like that as well, and trying to get that right there and do a good job and not let my team down. It was an awesome experience there as well. It was an important experience there for me and the team to show the white guy from Christchurch that I appreciate the culture, and wanted to give my all into that. So I'm proud of that as well, what me and Neeks did there.
I think the leaving impression I also had with you with my FM, and for anyone who obviously was listening to the station while you were working there, is that you were quite a part of the team. I remember listening to the shows and obviously seeing on social media, producer Ryan, you kind of became a part of the show more than what normal producers would do traditionally. Like, I guess producers for the most part usually stick in the background. Was that something that was like intentional, or do you feel like that's something that naturally happened? Because to me, it seemed like the audience really gravitated towards you, and particularly, and this is going to, like, I guess the final point where we'll be heading towards, obviously your move to where you are now. How did people react, obviously, when you announced that you were heading away and that My FM wasn't going to have producer Ryan anymore?
Yeah, no, that was very much, I'd put that down to Neeks in there. Some producers, I suppose, want to be, for me, I prefer being behind the scenes and grafting away and working on some content, and whether it's chasing an interview or chatting to someone on the phone, like a listener on the phone, or whatever it is, or creating some content. I love behind the scenes and working for that as well. And then, so for me, I'm not trying to be on air or anything like that as well. But that was very much down to Neeks, who I work with as well. So he started putting my name in the, when he was saying it on air. So it'd be the My Own Crew with, he'd say, Neeks and Nate Teagan and producer Ryan, and he'd even be saying that on air when he was doing intros onto the show and stuff like that, which is not normal to say your producer's name in the show title when he was when he was back selling. So that was very much down to Neeks in there as well. And I used to do a top five plays of the week which I'd just replay some audios and kind of take the piss out of the guys a little bit as well. And that was a bit of an integration there as well. And then also when Nate was away, when he'd be late in the mornings, which I referred to earlier when he was going through some legal issues, we used to have this segment called Sexy at Six. We'd start the show every morning. My morning crew would, the three announcers would pitch a sexy song and why you should vote for it. The one that got the most votes would get played in the morning as well. So I'd often, I am actually an old school hip-hop and R&B lover, but for me it's even like I'm real old school as well. I me and a guy, Matt, used to go to school with it when I went to school in Christchurch growing up. He had an iPod and I didn't. And so we used to share an earphone each when we were in for the studying together. And he just had like his dad's music on there and he had so much Motown. And used it. So I kind of grew up on that as well, in old school R&B. And then so we would do 60 at six and I used to play some old school tunes. I think I earned a little respect from the audience there as well. And that's what kind of won the MyFM audience over. Probably liking me there was 60 at six there as well. So playing some old school jams that I just loved and still do as well. That's my music taste as well. So that was one way. And then so I was just slowly getting integrated into the show naturally through these things as well. So I wasn't like saying, give me a spot or talk to me. Mm. Like I wasn't trying to do anything like that as well. So again, like most of my stuff there, just kind of fell into that spot there. And then Nixon was definitely promoting some stuff there as well. And I'd just be naturally falling into the show with bits of content, telling some stories. But it was never, I was never like putting my hands up, trying to be on air more or anything like that as well. So it became quite an integral part of the show. And also the other factors, Nixon and I had been, so by the time I left there, I'd been there for 6.5 years. So in that time, we'd changed different co-hosts as well. So we had Lily and then she left and we had Tegan who joined. We had Nate, he left and we had Jordan who joined as well. So we'd been shuffling through a few different co-hosts, but for a good 6.5 year period there, Nix and I were the constant on the show. Mm-hmm. We'd been there and been voices on the show and stuff like that for a long period there. So he was throwing me into the show a bit more just as a new person. I'd been there for a while. So by the end of it as well, I'd been a voice on that show for a long time there already. So it all just came kind of naturally. And so I was a big part of the show there more than I was trying to be. But it's still step back and it was, the hosts were there for a reason. They're amazing hosts and amazing announcers. Jordan, Tegan, Lily, Nixon, Nate, they're all amazing announcers who I worked with at that time. So I was very much behind the scenes, let them do their job. They were there for a reason. They were great communicators, great entertainers, and I was kind of trying to be in the background as much as I could.
Well, then how was it for you then when you did eventually leave? Like you said, you worked with Nixon for many years. You're coming up, obviously, this is moving into your eventual move to Breeze. How was it that day that you're obviously, I'm assuming, telling them that you're going to be leaving? Like, and what kind of built up to that decision? Were you approached by the Breeze or... Because obviously you had your partner, your wife, Nikki, who was living in Christchurch, I believe at the time. Am I correct in saying that? And then, or was it more or less you were always going to return home to Canterbury at some point? Like, how did that all eventuate, you moving to the Breeze and obviously returning home?
Yeah, so we did certain parts where it was long distance with my wife, girlfriend at the time, where she was in Christchurch and I was in Auckland. But by the end, for the last 4 years, she'd moved up to Auckland and we were living together in Auckland as well. And so what happened was we'd been, I'd been there for almost 6.5 years and Nikki had been there for about 4, going on 5 years in Auckland. And what happened was she was having her siblings were having kids and stuff like that down south, and she was flying back as much as she could and stuff like that, but she was missing all these birthdays and she was missing all these events, and then her family were almost like growing up and she was missing all these kids growing up and her parents and sisters, stuff like that, and for me the same as well. So we'd had chats there as well about possibly moving, but it hadn't really been set in stone, but just those things, missing out on those things we wanted to be a part of. And then Nikki got an opportunity to move back down to Christchurch. She had the opportunity to have that conversation more seriously. And then I spoke to Nixon, who had worked with the show for years, there was a period where he was the interim boss at MyFM. So he was running it when DJ Severe Phil had left. So he was running it. So I went and spoke to Nixon. I said, hey, here's the story. I'm keen to move back to Christchurch, and my wife's got a bit of an opportunity as well here. So, and he was obviously like, oh, shit. Like, and he was like, oh, I want to be here for a few more years. Can't you stay and we'll leave together?
Type thing was his origin.
Yeah, there as well. But I think we spoke about that earlier as well. Like, we've been together for so many years, working together, me and Nixon, for 6.5 years. There'd be certain things where we just know what we communicate through a look to each other, yeah, as well. As the anchor of the show, he'd be facing where I was, my producing booth, and we just knew from a look sometimes like what each other was meaning. So we had such a good relationship there as well. And he was like, we should leave together, type thing. So anyway, he's like, oh, you're ditching me. anyway, so I pitched to him, and then yeah, we spoke with other bosses and stuff like that as well. And then I said, like, I'd love to stay in the company, some other opportunities and stuff. And then so he said, let me speak to his boss, who spoke to his boss, and then had that guy come to me and say, we've got an opportunity popping up here in Christchurch, and you have to go through the interview process, but we've got a role here if you be interested. And that's when I heard about there was a teacher role at the Breeze here in Christchurch, producing the local breakfast show here in Canterbury. So coming back home, and I remember growing up in Christchurch, driving when mum was driving us to school in the early days and stuff like that, and then having the Breeze on when it just kind of started up here in Christchurch and stuff like that. So I remember listening, I had some good memories of the station. So yeah, that's how it worked out there. And then got the move down here. So, and also while that was happening in the background, we looked at house prices up in Auckland if we were to buy and stay and live in Auckland. And then we looked at Christchurch here, and the house I'm in right now, we built, me and my wife built here in Christchurch. And so we built our family home here as well. We got married in Christchurch, and now we get to, I literally, last night I was at my sister's birthday. We had a family get together and celebrated her birthday, which is something I wouldn't have been able to do when I was living up in Auckland as well, because with all the different events flying down every other weekend almost as well. And so anyway, that was the catalyst for moving. So it was a combination of things that all kind of bundled together and made sense to move back down to Christchurch, back home.
Do you feel like that's maybe something that a lot of people don't really talk about or focus on when they look at, like, obviously having a career in broadcasting? Because, yeah, I can definitely relate to you in the sense of I've certainly missed out on many a family birthday or event or anything like that, purely because of, yeah, sometimes the hours can be crazy, the commitments can be a bit wild. Do you feel like, yeah, that's something that you have, yeah, kind of proclaimed now that you're back in your hometown, moving to this role?
Yeah, for sure. And I loved my time in Auckland, my time with MyFM, and like, yeah, I loved every minute. It was just, the whole thing was an awesome experience. Loved it so much. But for me, I felt like when we'd done some things like won the radio awards and stuff like that as well, and got some awesome ratings and achieved some awesome things, I wasn't leaving unfinished. I felt like we'd done enough good stuff there, and I was very happy with what I'd done there as well. So for me, it felt right to leave. It wasn't like I was being like, oh, shouldn't I? It was, it felt like, yep, cool, I've done what I wanted to do. When I first got that phone call saying, do I want to come up and produce that show and stuff like that as well, if that career I had up there doing that, if you'd offered me that at the start, I would have taken that. I loved it and had a great time. So for me it felt right, and to come back home and focus more on the personal life and stuff like that as well, while still doing a good job here and the new role I was taking. But yes, no, for me it was awesome moving back home and putting that first. And I joined my brother's rugby team about 5 days after I'd came back to Christchurch. I was putting on the Marist gear, and I was playing rugby down here, and Div 3 in the social team as well. But I hadn't played rugby since my Christchurch days, so it'd been a good 37, probably 7 years or something. So I put the boots on, just a bit of touch in between. But anyway, so I was straight back into it as well, and like catching up with friends. And I was just down in the area of Methven a couple of days ago, golfing with some old schoolmates and stuff like that. And
we were catching up when we were
like, it's cool. And back with some old friends. And like I said, my sister's birthday, we had dinner out, me and the family, last night and stuff like that as well. And yeah, built a house here. And so, no, for me, that was the idea about moving home. It's been everything I wanted, really, heading back here. So it's been amazing. And now we've got a big place here. My wife, she loves animals. So we foster animals for SPCA here as well and look after that. I think in the 3.5 years I've been back here, we've had, I think, about 63 foster animals we've had here, from guinea pigs and cats, and there was a lamb here one time, and dogs and stuff like that as well. We built this house. We've got there's a foster room and stuff like that as well. And anyway, it's been moving back here has been awesome, and having the opportunity. So I feel like I did some good career stuff up in Auckland, and then it was time to come home and put personal life, and get a good work life balance as well. And then the role I've got here now, we're producing. Producing the breakfast show for The Breeze, which he's listening. We play a lot more music as well. We'll have two song sweeps in the morning for breakfast, and sometimes the songs are 4.5 minutes. There can be a 9 minute break of songs without talking, and we'll do other things. I'll be talking to listeners and sorting out content and sort of interviews and doing lots of things behind the scenes there. But it's completely different to on my, when we were just all go and stuff like that as well. And it was sometimes we'll get in 2.5 minute songs, where I'd go in and let a guest in from the other side of the building, get them set up, make sure everyone's all sorted with their notes and what they need to talk about, and liners for companies and things like that, make sure that's all good. I'll speak to someone on the phone there who's calling through, reply to something on the text line as well, make sure a post that we'd scheduled is going up, and I'm doing all this in a couple of minutes, and make sure the host, the guests is all set and you're on air. And it was all just like go, go, go. The whole morning was just things happening. And then, with the breeze switching there, it is an easier pace, but we're focused on different things. And I'm loving it there. And the hosts I work with there, Hillary and Fitzy, are pros. I like I said, when I was driving in to school getting dropped off, I used to listen to Hillary, who I do the show with now. She was on air talking. I remember listening to her there as well. And that was one of the reasons I came back, when I said The Breeze stood out to me as well when I got offered that job there as well. I remember listening, and then now I'm working with Hillary, who I used to listen to in the morning and stuff there. It's a real cool kind of full circle moment as well. And she's one of my good friends. We were just messaging, sending some Instagram memes to each other just before as well, because she's currently on holiday at the moment as well. But it's real full circle. I'm loving what I'm doing now.
Yeah, because I was going to say as well, that must have been a big change going from national syndicated radio to then fully local breakfast show. What do you think has been some of the biggest differences you've kind of noticed from your time now working at The Breeze? Because it's a completely different audience, but also it's a completely different audience in the sense of how you're talking to them as well, because it's obviously very localized. Do you feel like that presents its own challenges in terms of how you produce content or what you talk about?
100%. And for me, it doesn't present its challenges. It presents its opportunities. I love that going there. That was an awesome thing. It was like when we had a host leave at Maya. For me, it was an opportunity to do more and stuff like that, instead of thinking in a negative sense of like, oh, now we had to train someone up or get them into the show and get into, I was thinking, oh, awesome, what can we do now? What do they offer that we can do differently and things like that we can do that? And that's the same for me as well with the local content. Like, awesome, what are the opportunities we can do that I can do differently as well? These guys are already doing it. But for me, thinking of the content and stuff like that. So I've loved the opportunity there to kind of really own local. And for me, one of that is getting out and about. So I love, I always say to Hillary and Fitzgerald with at the moment, I said, we can be stuck in these four walls in a studio trying to come up with content and ideas and stuff like that, or we can just get out and about and go into the community and be a part of it as well. So I book out our Breeze car. We're out almost every day, just going about into different areas, doing different things as well. We do a coffee shout where you'll text through your order, and we go to a business every Wednesday, and me, Hills and Fitzy will go and hand deliver your coffees and stuff like that as well, and interview and talk to some different businesses here. And we're meeting heaps of different people here in the community in Canterbury all the time, and speaking to some people. Like, it's really awesome. And then we do things like every year, and how we started a thing. We won a New Zealand Radio Award for best local promotion when we did our Canterbury Caravan Tour. So for a week, we drive around in a caravan doing a show, broadcasting. We turn the caravan into a studio, and we drive around to different areas in the Canterbury area, and do a show from there and highlight that area, that town for that day. And we just highlight them and we get through amazing people to come through, and some real local heroes and stuff like that to chat, and important figures from local firefighters who have been there 50 years to this guy who turned his an old plane, an old 747 plane into a house. We went and visited there as well, and like where you just go around and celebrate these amazing people. We went to an area and Dan Carter's dad popped by, and we were doing goal kicking with Dan Carter's dad and stuff like that as well, just because he was an amazing man in the area and stuff like that. So we were just so that show there, like things like that, we can just drive around and do local shows and speak to people locally, and for me, if we were doing that on a network level, it's a bit harder because we can't just hop out in the car every day and just do everything in Auckland. That's someone who's listening down south and in the Invercargill's not going to care about what's happening in Auckland. But being local, for me, that was one of the awesome opportunities to get out and about. We could just, like, literally everyone and listening is within a kind of 2-hour radius. We can drive to anywhere we want to go type thing. We can meet anyone we want to. If there's a local story happening, hop in the car, let's go see them, let's go be a part of it with them, let's go enjoy it, let's go face to face, let's go grab a video and interview them as well. Or like, if someone texts through about something to see, we'll drive there, we'll go do it. So that's one of the awesome things about local for me, is like, it's right at our doorstep. Why don't we be involved and go and do that? So, and we can touch on all the local things that are just affecting us as well. We've got local traffic and things like that. So Fitzy will be doing the breakdown, and I'll be talking to callers and like stuff like that as well. We can be more localized and in that sense about things as well. We can really hone in what's happening to the people of Canterbury and affecting them that morning. So for me, the opportunities there are awesome, and we can just get out and go do it and be involved in it. So there was one thing holding up some traffic somewhere there. So I parked one morning and we couldn't get a good update on what was happening. So I had to run along, and it was a fire somewhere as well. And then, so I was like on the scene reporting back to Hilson Fitzy about it on air as well, doing some live.
Oh, you're in the car. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah.
And then without trying to cause any traffic myself as well. But then like this, we can do things as well. That's just so local, and it's like, right in the moment there as well. Like, it's, that's one of the things I love there. There's just awesome opportunities going from network to local. You can do different things there as well. So I'm enjoying that challenge at the moment.
And in terms of obviously your career as a whole, if you were to encapsulate it, or maybe even have like, I guess, a sentence to describe maybe how you feel like your career's gone, like how would you describe it? Because obviously you said you've been doing mentorship, you've been doing a lot of stuff in terms of working with the younger broadcasters. I guess the better way of putting this is what advice would you give to up and coming producers who are thinking about getting into radio, whether it be local or network? What would be like, I guess, your line that you would say to anyone thinking about doing it?
Yeah, well, it's kind of, I've always said to people as well, sometimes it's, good timing and good prep. So you've got to be ready for when an opportunity comes as well. And like I said, that happened with all my roles and all the things that switched there and worked for me as well. Sometimes it was good timing, but I was putting my hand up for things as well. I was prepared. I was, I'd put in the work. So things weren't just falling in my lap for things. I'd worked hard and done certain things in the build-up, but timing was a lot of good elements for me as well. Even the move to Christchurch, the producer who was there in the role before me wanted to move to Auckland. So the timing actually worked really well. He moved to Auckland, I moved to Christchurch there. So there was good timing in that as well, because in this industry, there is certain roles that are already there. So sometimes if you want that role, it's just a timing thing as well. So, but you want to be prepared. And then on top of that, if you work really hard too, for me, it's work ethic. I've just worked really hard and people notice. And sometimes it'll just be like, even times I might just stay late and be the last. There's been days where it's stupid. I've just been the last one in there as well. And someone comes back because they've got something. They'll see you and go, oh, what are you still doing here? I was like, oh, I'm just trying to figure out this here or something like that as well. And that gets all noticed and stuff like that as well. So all those little things of working hard gets noticed. And so for me, good timing, but good prep. Be ready.
And the final question I'm going to have, and I'm probably going to put this to all the guests that I have, and I hope I get some varying answers, because I think it's going to be quite interesting to see what people say. Where do you see the New Zealand broadcasting industry going at the moment? Or where do you see the broadcast industry going? Obviously, you're working in radio. I used to work in radio as well. I've done shifting over into podcasting as well. Where do you see it going? What's your kind of vision for how radio is going to be in the next, like, 10 years?
Yeah, well, radio's just seemed to be quite resistant, and it's obviously have its challenges as well. And there are some issues and layoffs and things like that as well. And it has had some tough times, the whole radio industry, but it seems to be able to kind of hold on and do pretty well. And there's certain things, like when we've had in New Zealand some certain natural disasters or other things like that as well, people kind of generate to radio, and you really know in those times there as well that, and being part of it, taking the calls and stuff like that, it's a safe place for people. It's reliable and people can come there as well. And I think radio's always got a place here in New Zealand media. And I think it is evolving, and podcasting, like you're doing, Jamie, as well, is definitely where ourselves as MediaWorks company I'm working for are branching out and doing a lot more podcasting and stuff like that. Even for stations, we've got different avenues we can go down here as well. So I think for me, there is always a place for radio in the New Zealand media landscape and media in general. So there's always a place for it. It's doing, and we've just got to keep up and evolve and stuff like that as well. Work digitally, which you see a lot more online, whether that's Facebook, Instagram as well, got to keep up there, but also podcasting realm. So I think, yeah, radio is going to keep trying to keep up with things and keep up to date and not get left behind. But also, I think there's always a place as well to just switch on that dial. And I notice when I'm talking to someone who's in a bakery first thing in the morning, and it's just them by themselves for hours, and they'll call through and have a chat to us and stuff like that. Or as a truck driver who's pulled over and who's been on the road for themselves for hours and stuff like that as well. Or it's an old lady who was having some trouble burning a CD, who called me one time there as well and had been listening to us as well. And but it's just that human interaction and stuff like that as well is one thing that radio has, which you can't have, which you can reach out, you can text and you can call through in live radio, where, yeah, it's, you can really be a part of it. And especially local radio, I'm loving here and being part of the community. When things are going on and people's mornings are affected, and they can call through us and be a part of it, or find something that relates to them. So I think there's always a place for radio, and it's that personal connection as well, that MeetaWe actually chatting and actually having that personal connection, which I love, which, yeah, people can call and text us anytime and we'll react to be part of it as well, and can share their experiences. So for me, yeah, I feel like whichever direction it goes, there is still a place for radio in New Zealand media.
Well, mate, I just want to say thank you so much for being on the podcast, obviously sharing some insights of obviously your career, your journey, and a little bit of obviously behind the scenes of kind of what was going through your head in terms of content ideas, you moving forward, and kind of your eventual move back from national syndicated radio to local radio. Just want to thank you so much, mate, for jumping on the mic and obviously having a chat with me.
Thanks for the opportunity, Jamie, and appreciate all your help as well. And one thing I didn't really mention is, your help with me earlier on in the piece there as well, and our Jamie and Ryan show, Banter with Jamie and Ryan, was one of my fond memories in radio, mate. That was one of the shows that didn't get enough recognition.
Mate, it should have been on the Nationals. It really should have been. A missed opportunity, I think.
But good talking to you, and all the best of this podcast going forward, Jamie. Really appreciate that time.
Cheers, mate. If you like the podcast, I'd love for you to leave a 5-star review on your preferred podcast platform and let me know your thoughts on the show. Don't forget, you can reach out to me via Instagram at beyondbroadcastpod or via email at beyondbroadcastpod@gmail.com. Until next time, take it easy.